Now, our next guest writes, simply put, the structures of American democracy have failed to keep pace with the changes in politics and society. Julia Azari is Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. She's been thinking a lot about America's political institutions and how they relate to what she describes as a political crisis in our country right now. Julia wrote about this for Foreign Affairs magazine. Julia, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Before we get to the bad news you lay out in your piece, Julia, you start off with some kind of good news as you see it. A lot of political participation and a lot of people being represented in American politics who might not have in the past. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So some of this comes out of this conversation that people across the ideological spectrum have been having for really about 4 years now. Since President Trump appeared on the scene as a candidate for the Republican nomination in 2015, there's been this kind of conversation about what's gone wrong in American political institutions. And a lot of it has a kind of nostalgic tone. And, you know, it's hard for someone like me to hear that and not think, well, you know, in 1965, I probably wouldn't have been on this stage with you or writing in this magazine. And there's a lot of people to whom that applies who are women or people of color or LGBT people who are living life as themselves. And I think what, as I pointed out in the piece, you really saw that reflected in political institutions in the 2018 elections. You really saw a number of candidates of all different kinds of demographic backgrounds win positions of power. So one of the things I pointed out in the article is that a wider range of types of people have access to power than ever before. And as we think about this political crisis, I think it's important not to get too wrapped up in the nostalgia.
But there is a crisis, a political crisis, a crisis of governance. Before we get into the causes, how does that manifest itself? What are the symptoms we're seeing?
I think the biggest one is really in this kind of lack of ability to move forward on solutions to public policy problems. And to some degree, I think the gridlock in political institutions, and I'm thinking specifically of, you know, Washington and the U.S. Congress, reflects the divisions in society. But I think, you know, that's really starting to stress people out. When I speak to young people, as I often do as a college professor, they're, you know, again, all across the ideological spectrum are concerned with the economy. They're concerned with job opportunities. They're concerned with the environment. And I think, you know, we're not in a situation where we have a really healthy process of governance that can take a lot of different perspectives and turn that into some kind of forward movement on public policy.
You look at three fundamental concerns in our political system underlying a lot of this. I want to take them one at a time. You're right. One thing is that political representation, going back to the founding of the U.S., is tied to states and local districts. But our political conversation is more and more all about the national level. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so this is, I'm drawing a lot on a 2018 book by another professor at the University of Pennsylvania, Dan Hopkins, who writes a lot of this and documents the ways in which, you know, attitudes about the president are now affecting how people vote in state and local offices, how the news media has become increasingly national. And so all politics is national, and yet our structures are all localized. And so there's kind of a disconnect there in terms of how people can express themselves politically, and in terms of how members of Congress, you know, specifically are held accountable to their constituents. That all happens at a state and local level. And then they go off and they really are participating in a kind of national partisan conversation.
And you write that in many ways, the founders assumed that citizens of the United States would think of themselves as citizens of a state first and foremost. And then the federal level would be kind of another layer away. And that clearly doesn't seem to be the way things work now.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously when you talk about what the founders thought, there are many different people with different kinds of perspectives. But that was just a much more obvious way to think about who people were and how they might locate themselves in their political communities. The idea that we would someday have a huge nationally integrated political community, I think, is probably hard to imagine prior to mass communication and mass transit. So in a lot of ways, it's a relatively recent development that our politics is really truly, you know, nationally integrated, and where you don't have, for example, distinct regional factions of each party. That's only, you know, maybe several decades old as a phenomenon. There were conservative Southern Democrats really in Congress until about 10 years ago. There were still a handful.
How does that, though, interfere with the ability of, say, Congress to get things done? The fact that they're being judged more on this national level than as our local person in Congress?
And I think it happens. I think it happens in a couple of ways. One is that this, you know, one phenomenon that's come out of this is that if people are really thinking about politics in terms of these two national teams, there isn't a lot of sense of collaboration across. Well, people may disagree locally about some philosophical issues. They may be Republicans and Democrats, but together they want to advocate for the interests of their district. And then you might see some trading back and forth among members of Congress as far as the interests of their districts. You might see more collaboration across party lines from people of, you know, from the same state or locality. You do still see that to some degree, but the nationalization of partisan politics has eroded it to some degree.
Julia Azari is with us, professor of political science at Marquette University, talking about a piece she wrote in Foreign Affairs magazine looking at big shifts in American politics that can lead to a lot of dysfunction in our national politics today. Another point you raise is that you write that elections just were de-emphasized in the Constitution, but they matter more and more these days in practical terms. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so this one is really deeply close to my heart. I wrote a book about presidential mandate claiming that came out in 2014. And one of the things that I found there is that presidents have become more and more eager to emphasize election results. And it's become a kind of expected part of presidential rhetoric after an election, no matter how close or how, you know, they may have lost the popular vote and won the Electoral College, but they still, there's still kind of a norm that they will talk about it. And elections are really how I think many Americans process the idea of democracy, is about who votes, how open is it? And, you know, that's what's seen as legitimizing Democratic politics. And also, as we, you know, as we're in the thick of it now in the summer of 2019, elections are ongoing. We're kind of never not in them. And that really makes it difficult to have some space to govern. And it also means that, as I pointed out in the piece, it's just kind of at odds with how the Constitution is structured, where our elections, they're fixed, they're periodic, they're staggered. So you can have an election like 2016. One of the things I emphasize there is that 2016 was, as there's been a huge amount of narrative building from Republicans and Democrats about what that election meant. And it was, I think, really quite important to President Trump and to Republicans to establish their story about what that election meant about public opinion. Then comes 2018 and Democrats win. And so the question is, or at least they win in the House, the question is, what does that mean? And it's a very similar kind of dynamic. If you look back to 2008, big victory for the Democrats, then midterm 2010, victory for Republicans. So what does that mean for governance? Well, it means that you need to move on from the election being the main source of what you're doing and think about what's good public policy, and then have some processes to work toward that.
It's hard to see how we would get to that point, assuming that it functioned better in the past, maybe a little bit of a golden age there, I don't know. But how do we get to a point where politicians don't think about the election? It seems like they're kind of always looking over their shoulder at the next election.
No, absolutely. And, I don't want to downplay the importance of elections as an important way to be held accountable. I think the trick to some extent here is to think about, are you serving your constituents? Are you getting public policy done? Are you doing something you can explain? Versus what did that last election mean? And who now has the right to sort of solely govern and set the agenda? Because very rarely in American politics is the answer to that simple. So it is a little bit tricky. And that's one of the reasons that I picked some of these areas, is because these first two elections and the national versus local have, you know, they have a lot of push and pull. There's a lot of tension there. You can see arguments for different ways that you might balance these considerations. But the trick is that they're kind of their intention now. We don't have a clear roadmap for what the balance should be.
Julia Azaria is with us, associate professor of political science at Marquette University, talking about political institutions in the United States, how they've maybe moved away from society as a whole, and how to bridge the gap and create a more healthy democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on how to fix dysfunction in federal government? Do you agree that there is some dysfunction in federal government? What, if anything, do you need to change? Do you have questions for our guest about what we've been talking about so far? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Julia Azaria, associate professor of political science at Marquette University. We're talking about America's political institutions and how our guest thinks they don't match up so well anymore necessarily with American politics and society. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think your representative government represents you well? How would you change things to make government function better? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. Julia, let's get into the third, got a fundamental point you raise, the colorblindness of American institutions. This will take some explaining. Flesh this out for us.
Yeah, so this one gets into obviously some difficult territory. But one of the things that I had thought a lot about, having studied the the Civil Rights Act and kind of anti-discrimination policy that really forms the basis of how most Americans, I think about the role of race in our society. And that's kind of, did you overtly discriminate against someone? Are you, are you behaving as a hateful person? And most people, who are in a position to ask themselves that question don't want to believe that about themselves. But that's not the only way that racism plays out. So, I refer a bit to Ta-Nehisi Coates's work on reparations, where he talks about the depth of economic inequality between Black and white Americans, and more structural issues like that. We're starting to really, I think, have more of that in the public conversation. And so we really have this mismatch between a story that many people, especially people like myself who grew up in the 80s and 90s, learned that, this is really about non-discrimination. And in fact, it's, the story of what has gone on in the United States and the story of how race affects people's lived experiences is much deeper. And it's not just about all of us asking if we have, bigotry or hatred toward people different from us in our hearts. It's this sort of structure question. And that's much more difficult. It's much more difficult to deal with. Obviously, there are different solutions, like the kind that Coates poses. There are people working on this in the criminal justice system. And to some degree, I really think that this gets at a larger point I try to make in the piece, which is I'm a little bit, kind of contradicting my original argument, because I start in with institutions, but really the story that comes out of these institutions is part of the problem is social forces. And part of the problem is that you can change institutions, but there are also problems in society that tinkering with institutions isn't really going to change. So I'm writing this a little bit to have an argument with myself and other people who've been writing about the crisis in American democracy.
Bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Brian is with us in DeForest. Brian, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Brian?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I guess I've been very interested in this subject for a long time and discussing this with friends, but I do believe systems are a big part of what gets our democracy to work, and I was wondering what your guest thinks about the ideas of possibly like ranked choice voting, public financing of elections, and term limits as ways to help get people maybe with a better interest in civic duty as opposed to the gamesmanship of today's politics.
Brian, thanks for the call. Julia?
Yeah, so these are questions I get a lot. Last year, I gave a talk in Maine where they've just implemented some ranked choice voting, and people there are very enthusiastic about it. Let me speak. So that's kind of like the whole, you know, that's a very rich buffet of reforms here. Let me speak to ranked choice voting, and then sort of more generally to the question about civic mindedness. So people, as I said, in Maine seem pretty happy with ranked choice voting. I know many people in the political science community are very enthusiastic about that possibility. It could, you know, providing people with more choices might really help with some of the questions of how well represented people feel. The concern that I have is that it makes the electoral system a little bit more complicated. It's a little bit less obvious how votes translate into who wins the election. And that, I think, can have, you know, there is a little bit of research that suggests that can alienate some people. So I think with any of these reforms, you run into the possibility that they might solve some problems, but also some unintended consequences. When it comes to the idea of civic mindedness, I think that's obviously really important that in a democracy, people have some sense that they belong to a political community that they share with others. At the same time, my reading of history is that most of the time, politicians have been politicians. They've had interests. Their constituents have interests. They, you know, those interests can mean they have principles, they have ideals, they have things they believe. I don't see that being different today. If anything, a lot of the time, the complaints that we get about our politicians is that they're too ideological. They're too committed to their larger ideals. And so I think, you know, I don't know that part is what is so different from the past. I think the trick is you've got a lot of people in this country who are engaged in the political process who have very different viewpoints about how things should look. And what's fallen apart is the ability for those people to have some kind of process that brings them to a compromise that everyone feels at least was fair, and that produces solutions to problems that are at least sustainable through, you know, through a couple of election cycles. So I have a somewhat different viewpoint than the caller about precisely what the problem is.
Brian, thanks for that call. Julia Azari is with us from Marquette University, talking about a piece she wrote in Foreign Affairs magazine about some fundamental problems with American political institutions. Julia, given that the people in power were elected and brought into power under the current system, who do you look to fix these problems you're pointing out?
Yeah, that's really tricky. And that's one where, again, you know, there's a couple of things, right? As, you know, as our previous caller pointed out, with things like ranked choice voting, changing the voting system a little bit, that can be done at the state level. So you are seeing states and localities experiment with different ways of allocating votes. You know, different kinds of governmental processes. So you're seeing a little bit of that. Different rules about voting, things like that. But, you know, so I think you can see that. I think to the degree that people want serious wholesale change, it's interesting to me that you don't have a lot of active social movements that are really agitating for a constitutional amendment. It's really hard to change the Constitution. That's definitely true. But it has happened. So, you know, I think it's kind of interesting. One of the repeated tropes we see in our politics is that something isn't going to happen, so why try? You know, that's like that kind of organizing. We don't really. I'm not seeing as much of that as I would have expected. So that's. I mean, I guess that's sort of the answer. Is if you want something done, you have to get together with like-minded people and start pushing for it.
In just our last few moments, Julia, do you worry about disillusionment with the system based on this dysfunction?
I worry a lot about that. It seems to me that a lot of the political institutions that we depend on, that we could, you know, we could tinker with how they work, but their kind of fundamental concepts, having a legislature, having political parties, having elections, that though the people are suspicious of those, the media people, obviously you and I maybe are both a little biased on this on this subject, but the idea that the media, you know, is not honest or not out to do a good job, you can change all of those institutions, but you have to have some sense of what their purpose is and that there needs to be something in place. And that in any of those kinds of institutions, a legislature, a political party, an election, you're not always going to get what you want. And you have to kind of trust your fellow citizens won't completely throw you under the bus. And that's really where, you know, where my concern lies, is in that general lack of trust of fellow citizens that has to underlie a political community.
Julia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Julia Azari, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. We talked with her about what she sees as a mismatch between our political structures in the U.S. and our role as citizens in moving forward a functioning democracy. You can read her piece over at Foreign Affairs Magazine under the headline, "It's the Institutions, Stupid, the Real Roots of America's Political Crisis."